This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Talk a lot about golf on this show for obvious reasons, but Tiger Woods is certainly a figure that transcends the sport. And we know that he was involved in that major accident. Was that this year? I guess it was, right? Had to be at the beginning of this year, maybe?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, everything runs together now.
Go ahead.
Everything runs together. But he was involved in this major accident where he was going at least 82 in a 45. And, you know, doctors said it was 50-50.
It's February.
Yeah, February, on whether or not he would even get to keep his leg. Right? They were talking about amputating his leg. And he gave his first sort of interview since then, his first extensive interview since the accident today. And, you know, This is sports, right? And everything everything has a shelf life, and even in golf, you know, there's a time that comes for everybody. But it sort of felt like this is the first acknowledgement for Tiger that, and we certainly know that they're like, that is the one thing that it persists in golf and fans, is that Tiger, you know, it's a major, Tiger, everybody waiting, right? Everybody waiting on, and they had that moment. They had that moment with the Masters. I guess it was last year, a couple years ago. I can't remember. The great moment with his kids and everything like that. But that's starting to feel like, and maybe it did at the time, I don't really remember, but that's starting to feel like the last hurrah for Tiger, because he acknowledged today that he is never going to play golf full time ever again.
Yeah, says I'll never play, and that's hard, you know, to take that in at what? How old is he? 46.
46. He'll be in December.
You know, to take that in at this point is tough, because you feel like a lot of guys got plenty of golf left in them in that age. But, you know, as great as he was, for him to sort of have come to this conclusion already, and you saw it when he got off the podium, like when he was done. One of the reporters asked him, are you in physical pain right now? He said, yeah, my leg's hurting me right now as I'm sitting here talking to you.
Yep.
But then it was after he got off the podium that you could see how gingerly he was moving, almost like, you know, sort of this might be – his pain for the rest of his life. You know, clearly there's still some healing left to be done with that leg injury. Is horrific, but it looked like, and from the way he was talking about the golf's done, and basically I'll just be playing some rounds of ha-ha and playing with my friends, it just looked like that was something he's probably going to be dealing with for the rest of his life. And at 46 years old, I mean, I'm 45. I look at it, I still, and many times consider myself a young man.
Well, you're not.
When you're moving around like that, watch your mouth, when you're moving around like that, man, that youth that you might feel, that still I can do this.
Yeah,
so much of it gone. So, you know, it's tough.
Well, it's a reminder, really, like of your own mortality. I think for a lot of people, right, with Tiger Woods, I mean, he was on top of the sport forever, you know, and everybody thought, you know, 2005, 2006, whatever, that he was going to break every record. He was going to break Jack Nicklaus's major record. He was going to do all these things, and he very clearly is not. That 2019 Masters is, I mean, that's going to be it. Like, I don't see him winning another major at this point at 46, after the spinal fusion, after the leg stuff. Like,
no, you know, let's see. I had counted that out for a while, and now it feels like the difference is now is that now we're talking about not playing competitively at all. And
exactly.
I think that's what I was still holding on to some hope for was,
yeah
sure, he's not going to catch Jack, but that surely he can get out there and you can get excited about Tiger Woods being in a tournament again. But, I mean, he all but put it to bed, you know, today. It's not, it's his, what do you say? It's my reality now. Mm-hmm. It's an unfortunate reality, but it's my reality. I understand it. I accept it. But he said never full time again. Like, and I don't know how you, you know, if he already knows that now,
yep,
and he's not angling towards that,
right?
You know, it's the end of an era.
Well, that's exactly right. If he sort of accepts himself,
then he's not trying to come.
No doubt.
The rehab, all done.
Who knows how many he will even appear in?
I heard him talking about, you know, what he's done and what his kids have mostly seen growing up is the Tiger Woods that's rehabbing, not the dominant Tiger Woods that owned golf. But sure, you had your Masters moment, but not the Tiger that was on that run. They didn't see it. What they got mostly is the Tiger trying to make a comeback and the Tiger in rehab from this injury. And so his point was, they've seen me on Call of Duty when they're going off to school. That's the me they know right now. And he didn't seem like hell-bent on showing, was it Charlie? The dominant Tiger again.
Yep.
He's done with trying, it feels like, when
right.
he says this. And so that, to me, was the news today that, you know, he's sort of come to this conclusion that it's over for me and just even playing competitively. Forget winning a major again. I'm done as a competitor. And that must take some, you know, for a guy that's competed at that level, man, that's a lot to swallow, right? That it's behind you, that I'm done trying. So, you know, it's sad in many ways, obviously, but let's be real, too. You trade that in all day long, how most of us would, the greatness and the level that he reached,
yep,
and everything that came with it. You know, to be even to experience that for a few seconds, much less the years and the span that Tiger did. You know, I think we would all take.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of success and being that good at your craft.
Yeah, he's three obviously behind Jack right now in terms of majors. Jack's got 18 and Tiger has 15.
Well, that's where he will stay, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, I just think, you know, golf is, you know, there's a lot of it's tough, man. There's a lot of great golfers now, man. You know, like, you're just not lapping the field like you used to be able to do. There's just so much. I hope he wins one more. That'd be great, you know, and then you can call it a day. That's kind of how it would feel, but certainly not getting a four.
What I'm going to be interested to watch is watching him pour into, again, his son. It sounds like he is hoping for his son to have the competitive career. And imagine the knowledge, imagine the edge you have when Tiger Woods is pouring into you, you know. And again, we've talked about this. Most of the time, when you are the son of a great one like that, you don't even come close to reaching those sorts of expectations, right? That, oh man, you're Tiger Woods, you're Michael Jordan's son, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't come close to that. But he seems. You know, we've seen Charlie swing. It looks good.
Yep.
Like it's so. Watching him develop and how maybe Tiger, you know, having had his cut short, pours into him now, hoping, okay, now go reach it, go break all my records. That,
yep.
I guess that's the next chapter to this story, because it feels like the competitive one for Tiger is done.
Well, yeah, and I hope that Tiger does feel some sort of
fulfillment in that, because that's the next chapter now. He's going to have to find that.
And also like an obligation, kind of like giving back to the game, right, like Kobe did after he hung it up. You know, like Kobe was involved, and he made all these films, and he was still around basketball. You know, like he felt like, I got to give back to the game. And
mm-hmm.
I know golf is a different beast entirely because it's individuals.
But no, but Kobe became a giver, to your point.
And I'm not saying Tiger Woods has to. I just hope he does.
No, yeah, I mean, it'd be not just great for the game, but for anybody who's pouring into.
I put Tiger in that category just of like interesting athletes, you know, like guys who, you know, yes, Tiger was dominant, but he was also an interesting and a fascinating dude just generally, you know. So I would like to see more of him. I don't want him to just vanish into, you know, obscurity and play Call of Duty all day, which is what he's doing now. Which, if he wants to, that's his right, you know. Certainly, you're right to do that, but I would hope he, you know, is a little bit more visible.
I mean, just go help the next Tiger emerge,
right,
beside your own son. That's
absolutely
my point. If that's been a part of him, you know, for a while now, but he has the power to change the game. He has the power, because of his greatness, to inspire. You know what I'm saying? And
yep.
So and if you use that power that you have, you can.
Yep.
He can change the look of golf.
He can,
if he wants to. Now, and again, I heard him talking about some of his charitable stuff today, and yeah, I still want to do that. It could become a passion for him to a point. If he could change the game, he could change the look of the game. He has that kind of power and that kind of clout. I just, you know, is that what he's interested in? Is it not? It might not be. And is it fair for me to heap that all on him? No, you go be the one to go do it. Go change the game now that you're done. No, I can't put that squarely on his shoulders, but it would be nice,
mm-hmm.
because I think golf could still use it. Listen, I mean, golf is still, even without, has golf not gone back to what it was before him in many ways, where it's typically the interest level is from whites.
Yeah.
And you're back to what you've got, because Tiger was crossing it over. Tiger in many ways was, okay, now I can come watch this now. Hell, I just use my dad as the example. I mean, yeah. My dad and others, I can come watch this now because right. There's a golfer that quote unquote looks like me out dominating. Well, now he's out.
Yep.
There ain't many of those. There ain't many black golfers out dominating right now. So
are there any?
Dominating? I don't know. How's Harold Varner? How's he doing lately?
I don't think he dominates.
Certainly
at all.
Not to the degree that Tiger was. So don't tell me there wasn't a point of pride for black when Tiger was out there. Now again, you know, how much does Tiger care about that part? Now that's a question that comes into it. How much do you care about being that face and that symbol? Do you? Is it something you look to as a responsibility or not? But my point is, with him gone, we kind of gone back to that.
Yeah.
To where it's, I mean, who? It's Brooks. It's who's my guy on the who's my buff?
Bryson.
Dude? It's Bryson. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is on the heels
of
Lee Elder,
John.
Don't put this on me.
And if anybody can bring a little diversity back, because yeah. I don't think diversity is a bad thing for the game of golf. We literally saw it at its peak when you had some diversity out there, had a dude dominate. Yeah. If anybody could help bring it back, it'd be Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I mean, think about it.
But he may not give a damn.
Vijay Singh.
He's gone. He was retired.
I know.
Is he? He's on the senior tour.
Yeah,
he's got to be on the senior tour.
But we need more Vijay Singhs.
You know what's wild? I told this to Jason yesterday. Lee Elder, who died yesterday at 87, it was only 46 years ago that he was the first dude to play as an African American at the Masters. Mm-hmm. Like that's not that long. That was 75. It's like you're right. There's only been Tiger, Lee Elder. I mean, there, and I think Vijay.
He's from Fiji.
He's from Fiji, right?
Yeah.
So
I'm not sure. I'm not sure where.
I don't know his background, to be honest with you. But you know, the point is, I think it's well taken. You know, like the inner city golf programs, especially through COVID, gone.
Oh yeah.
You know, like that's gone. So
golf is better. The more eyes you can have on.
I agree with
that. In fact, I mean, it gets a little bit boring when you kind of go back to just the old school.
Yeah. I mean, it's obvious.
Man, stop, because the last time you pulled up to a golf tournament was when?
When they asked us to do the show from
And that's as much attention as you've paid to golf
WGC.
Since. Yeah, since then.
Now,
that's the point.
I tried to tell people from jump that Tiger was never going to play in Memphis, and they just didn't believe me.
Now it's really over.
Yeah, and it was always an excuse. It was like, well, the Olympics and all.
Maybe he can come back and do the pro-am though, or something. You know, in that, because it sounds like
this man is not coming back to Memphis. Give it up.
He could make an appearance or in a pro-am or something like that. Again, you know, from a charitable standpoint, that could be a good thing. That could raise a lot of money.
An appearance here from Tiger would do a lot.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, just even forget being in the tournament. I'd love to have Tiger
because that's what it's got to be about now for him. Yeah. Because the competitive part's over, John.
Yeah,
which is sad.
Now go change the game in a different way.
Like, nope. did it affect you like Mike's retirement? You know, is this kind of, would you put this in the, it's weird because it's a slow drip with golf, isn't it? It's a very slow, like you phase out in golf. Whereas like in NFL and the season starts, you're not there. You know, in golf, like it's like a slow phasing out. He's just, okay, I might play in St. Andrews.
Well, we've been kind of getting prepped for this for a while. It's like he'd been gone for a while.
Are you emotionally prepared?
No, because I think I've been emotionally preparing myself for this for a while now.
Okay.
It's my dad and others that have apparently, you know, held out this hope that he's going to catch Jack, get back to some decent form that'll allow him at least to win a couple more. They got to come to grips with it. That's just not going to happen.
I really do feel like that 2019 Masters moment, like, was a perfect goodbye. You know,
well, now looking back, yeah, you can say that.
You know,
I think we still thought at that
time,
point,
maybe it would
there's
reignite.
More golf. He's going to win some more majors.
And he kind of said
saying.
That. He said that sort of in his press conference. He's like, that was the rejuvenator for his mental wellness. You know, it was winning that and coming back and doing that, which I could see that. You could see it at the time.
Yeah. Oh, it was awesome.
My thing is, you must be a long way mentally from that spot 2 years ago to where you are now, because at that point you must still feel like, man, I can play some good golf and still win majors, whatever else. And to be at this point where you say you can't
maybe
even
I can
play
get those three, maybe
anymore.
I can get those three tournaments.
Like, the mental change and what you've had to swallow to get to that point mentally must be huge.
Yep.
Because 2019, you're having that scene.
Yeah, you don't like Tiger has nothing like left to prove. He doesn't have as many majors as Jack, but don't people consider him the greatest of all time?
If he would have been jumping out of airplanes and doing all that Navy training and stuff, man, he did himself in a little bit. If you read some of these articles that have been written about it, like I he kind of did it to himself, especially the road lifestyle and some of those self-inflicted wounds too.
Like that, when you don't have the fire burning inside you, or like, oh, I gotta prove this, I gotta prove that, yeah. And you're hobbled, and you're 46 years old, and you've made all your money.
Yeah, but my point is, how's that fire out when he just won the Masters in 2019?
Right. Because it's been that, 2 years.
No,
he's been
the point is that this wreck was so bad. That's what I'm saying. That leg was just in such bad shape that you're gonna have to swallow. That's how bad that was.
Yeah.
We're talking about, he's lucky to still have the leg. Like, you watched him walking off that podium.
Don't you owe it
this
to your leg?
This dude realized, I can barely walk.
Don't you owe
play.
It to your leg, though, to get out there and do it again for hanging on? Like, you have your leg. So do you owe it to the fact that you still have the leg to go out there and try it again?
What are you talking about? You owe your leg.
You for your legs?
You don't owe your leg. You control your
the
leg.
The circumstances.
Your leg don't control you. You don't owe your leg
you
a damn
the
thing.
The circumstances.
You're lucky. You're blessed to be alive.
Right. So, Mac, capitalize on that blessing. Get back out there.
Well, maybe you're lucky to be alive, but what's been taken away from you is your ability to compete at a high level, and now you have to find another way of fulfillment. And that's why I think it feels like the crossroads, to use the word you love using all the time.
I haven't used that in a while.
That's the crossroads that he's at right now.
You've sort of taken that, just like you've taken everything. It's been
what will fulfill me?
Yeah.
He's at a crossroads.
It's been a gentrification of sorts, because you've been taking lots of stuff from me today. You took my analogy on it's about the other team, not the team that actually won, and now you're taking the crossroads. So you've taken that from me. It's like a reverse gentrification.
It's not taken. Just, again, using things that you some of your go-tos.
Yeah. No, they're really not my go-tos anymore. But yes, Tiger Woods had some sobering, I thought, real reality talk.
He would never play golf again full time.
Barry Sanders, that career was cut short.
Yeah, but he went out and still playing well.
That's that one hurt.
Jim Brown went out still playing well. Tiger went out.
No, he was not.
Not even, shadow of his former
self. I don't know, though. He kind of was. He won those two events in 2019.
He can't walk, bro.
I know, but I'm saying, though, he won those two events in 2019. He won the Masters, and then he won another one after that, and then COVID hit. So he kind of was playing well again. That's the other side of it.
That's what I'm telling you. That's what I'm saying. The fact that this fire is out is kind of amazing. It tells you how bad this wreck really was.
Right.
Because dude was close a couple of years ago.
Well, Tiger probably is looking at Brooks and Bryson. He's like, I can't drive like those guys anymore, right? Like, I can't do that. I don't have the power like those dudes have.
Well, he can, but dude is still built. Did you see his upper body in the press conference? He's built like a stud.
He looked heavy
right
in the
now.
Face, though. The face, like, he's not chiseled.
He looks big in the arms, I'm sure, because he's been eating in the face.
Yeah. He's 46. I mean, I'm going to cut him a little slack,
But, he was ripped when he got that last Masters, even in 19.
Yeah.
Like, he was ready to rock and roll.
But he probably has not had a lot of, exercise.
I thought he looked good up top. I mean, Brad might be right on the face looking a little chunky. I thought he looked pretty in great shape up top.
Up top. He's kind of barrel chested.
It didn't
almost.
Just look fat.
Yeah.
Looked like he'd still been doing some work in those rehabs. But now to get to this point where, just 2 years ago, man, it felt like you were back, or at least close to back, and maybe capable of winning many majors, multiple majors again. Now you're done. It's big news, certainly for the world of golf, and big news in the
what
world.
What an
of
icon,
Tiger.
Man! I mean, big time icon.
Yeah,
may never see it again. That great.
Yeah, you go. Jordan is in there. You got I think Tiger's in that conversation. Kobe. Those are three kind of iconic figures.
Absolutely.
Oh, I mean, you put you have to put Serena
James
Williams.
Wiseman.
Serena Williams in there.
Serena's an icon.
We're talking about folks
she's,
that changed the game.
She
literally changed the face of the game.
Yeah.
So James
Serena
Wiseman.
Williams up in there.
Oh. You see that movie yet?
What movie?
With Will, King Richard.
I've not seen it yet.
Yeah. I'm not going to see it.
Why not?
Because it was executive produced by the Williamses. I need some distance for it to be a real accurate depiction.
Oh, it's like Jordan's thing?
Yeah, I know. Y'all,
I
know y'all just
you
wanted
all
y'all,
that
y'all,
Jordan stuff.
Y'all put in there what y'all wanted to put in there, so I'm not going to watch.
Nobody needs you to watch.
Well, good, because it ain't happening.
Nobody needs your stamp of approval. Movie doing just fine.
That's fine.
Everybody says Will's great as Richard.
Everybody always says Will is great. When do people say he's not great? I'm sure he is. But I'm not watching. So I'm just going to take your word. You didn't watch either. You didn't watch for the same reason I did. You want real, authentic, raw, uncut, what was it like?
No, I just haven't been able to sit down and see it. We've been doing a lot of moving around lately.
Oh, yeah, you've been eating lobster.
And it's on HBO. It's on HBO Cinemax.
Taking lobster on the plane.
You got to add that to your YouTube package, as you know. Now, I think it has been free here the last few days. So
what is it?
The YouTube Cinemax thing. I mean, the HBO Cinemax thing. You have to add it to your YouTube TV thing, as you would know. You're the one that got us all to buy YouTube TV.
A lot has changed since then. They're cutting me with the Bally Sports.
But I do think right now that there's a free preview of HBO and Cinemax that I can get in and see that.
All right, well, we will talk to Barrett Jones when we come back, get his thoughts on Brian Kelly, get his thoughts on the rest of the SEC, Alabama, Auburn, obviously the college football playoff, all that and more when we come back. Jason and John, 90 Turn FM, ESPN. Barrett Jones is a man that has a lot of hardware, a lot of rings earned throughout his playing days. You know him from Alabama. You love him. Memphian. Catch him on ESPN Radio, doing it big. He joins us now. Barrett, when we put the request in, just kind of pull the curtain back a little bit, when we put the request in to have you on the show, it was actually just to explain the way you dilly-dallied in the Iron Bowl. But then a lot of things happen. And so we're going to let you explain that, but that's going to have to come later. The first item of business is Brian Kelly to LSU. Does this make sense to you?
Well, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me on. And it has been a coaching cycle like I've never seen before. I mean, there's just been so many crazy dominoes. And the craziest thing is that every time, you know, one of these dominoes falls, they've been falling from another enormous, you know, top job. And now there's another domino left to fall. Like, I don't feel like we've really solved any problems in a grand scheme from a college football. Like, there's still all the same amount of openings at the big schools. They just kind of shuffled around. So does it make sense? Yeah, I think it makes sense. Brian Kelly, he's the winningest coach at Notre Dame. And I think he probably had the feeling of, okay, I've really accomplished as much as I can accomplish here, which that's probably sad to hear for a lot of Notre Dame fans. But I think that's probably the reality of just the limitations on some of the recruiting that they can do, which sometimes I kind of roll my eyes at because, you know, Notre Dame likes to hold themselves up as this super elite academic institution. They're a great school. I'm not saying they're not, but they always like to point that out. And I don't think that they'll have a whole lot of pushback trying to get kids in LSU. Again, no pushback to the Tigers. I think he wants to win a national championship and feels like it's going to be tough to do it at Notre Dame. I think he wants to wrangle horns with the best, and, you know, he's probably thinking about his legacy. And so, yeah, I think it does make sense. It's unexpected. It's an enormous get for LSU. I mean, I saw something that said you could make the argument that he's, you know, the greatest coach ever hired at LSU at the time of the hiring. You know, obviously they hired Nick Saban, but when they hired him, he didn't have near the resume that Brian Kelly has right now. So I think LSU is a sleeping giant. They're not, obviously they haven't been sleeping for that long. They just came off of having maybe the greatest college football team of all time in 2019. But man, that place is just so primed and ready with the amount of recruits that there are in Louisiana. Obviously, there's only one big school there. Just the geographical, the fact that Nick Saban's getting older and there's going to be a power void at some point in the SEC West. I think it's a genius move, and I think ultimately Brian Kelly could walk away as not only the winningest coach in Notre Dame history, but one of the greatest coaches of all time if this goes the way that I think it could.
What do you make as somebody that's been inside, you know, many locker rooms in your day, and I don't know if you ever, I obviously didn't have to deal with any coaching changes or anything like that, but, you know, the way that Brian Kelly left, his assistants found out via the news. Apparently one was in a recruiting meeting and found out as he was leaving. And then Brian Kelly sends basically a WhatsApp message saying, "Men, you know, I'll meet with you in the morning, but yes, I hate that you found out this way." What do you make of the way Brian Kelly sort of went about his departure, especially, right, as it's not 100% done that Notre Dame is not going to make the playoff. Like, you could see some dominoes falling and they end up in the top four. What do you just make of the way that it was handled by Brian Kelly?
Yeah, I thought, wouldn't it be great if Notre Dame ended up winning the national championship and Brian Kelly wasn't even there? That'd be epic.
It would be. It's possible. It's not possible.
I don't think that will happen, but it's not outside the realm of possibility.
Yep.
So, you know, I've heard this a lot, and I think, if I'm being honest, I think too much is made of this in every situation. I mean, there's just no good way to do it, because the reality is, as soon as you have a meeting with the assistants, then it's out that way. You know,
right.
I don't think Brian Kelly wanted it to get out at that exact moment. So it's just so hard to control news that big. You know, I think most people kind of get over that, if I'm being honest. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, there's bad blood. Everyone's mad right now. And, you know, but I think once it all settles down, I mean, look, it's every situation, like what's the way to do it? Like you meet with the players and the team. And I mean, but the reality, they don't love to do that, but by the time they've accepted it, you know, then probably somebody at the institution they've accepted it at is leaking it. I mean, it's just, it's so tricky to do it. And with the news the way it is now and social media, I don't know the best way to do it. And it's such a tough position for coaches, relatively tough. I don't feel a whole lot of sympathy for a guy taking $95 million, but, you know, it's tough from the, they want to do the right thing to the players and the coaches, but it's almost just impossible to deliver the news in the manner and timing in which you want to do it because of, you know, because of everything. The only guy I can think of that somehow, like last year, Steve Sarkisian, they had like a total sneak attack at Texas, and out of nowhere he was hired. They were the only people that somehow managed to do that completely under the radar, and no one ever even really caught on that they were talking until he took the job. Otherwise, you don't hear about many times this day, especially before the season's over, where teams are able to do it, you know, covertly, and then have their time to announce it when they want to.
Does Lincoln Riley to USC make as much sense to you as Kelly to LSU does? And are you as optimistic about that fit as you are with Kelly to LSU?
You know, I tweeted this yesterday. Like, I think that the Lincoln Riley to USC thing, the more I thought about it, first of all, I have no information about anything. But, you know, I think it's just it might just be a lifestyle thing. Like, I know everyone loves to say, oh, he's scared of the SEC, or he doesn't want to compete against Saban in the West, all this stuff. I don't buy that. I really don't. I just, you know, knowing Lincoln a little bit, it doesn't really seem like him to me. So I kind of, my best guess is just that he and his wife, who, by the way, are in their 30s, you know, they just said, hey, do we want to live the next 10 years in Oklahoma, or do we want to live, you know, in Manhattan Beach? And, you know, the answer apparently is that they want to live in L.A. and build a life there, and they have young kids. And you know, look, I know everyone likes to hate on L.A., and I don't particularly love L.A. either, but there's some really nice areas of L.A., especially if the reports are true that they're going to buy him a $6 million house. I think he'll have a pretty good setup there. So, you know, look, I get it. And I think that people forget sometimes that these are human beings that, you know, have families, and, you know, probably their wives have opinions, just like our wives have opinions on where they want to live. And, again, I have no idea if that's the case. I'm just saying I think the human element probably played a part in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I, other than that, I have no idea. It totally blindsided me. I think LSU is a better job. I think it's easier to win at LSU, you know, long-term, just from a recruiting standpoint, from, all the different various challenges, the SEC, the money, you know, I think it's easier to win there. But hey, I guess it's definitely easier to win your conference, at USC. I just think, you know, winning a national championship, they got some serious infrastructure they're going to have to build over there. They're a little behind the facilities, and they're going to have to invest a lot of money and time into getting that thing right. And I think it's a multi-year project.
That was going to be my next question in terms of what this means for Oklahoma. I don't know where it ranks for Lincoln, but they are joining the SEC, and, you know, it's a different animal. I mean, you know that because you played every Saturday in the SEC. Don't you think this had to be a consideration for Lincoln that, you know, this ain't the Big 12, Toto? And the reality, too, is that, you know, it's not going to be – there's no guarantees whatsoever. You come from a league where you can basically be penciled in to win it every year, and you're joining one where you're going up against the who's who of college football coaching. How much of a consideration do you think that was, and what does that say about the Oklahoma job now?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I just don't – I've never met a coach that really thinks that way, honestly. I mean, I know it's easy for us to think that way, and maybe some coaches do. But I just, most coaches, you want to see if their stuff works against the best, and they feel like they are the best and feel confident that they can get it done anywhere. And so maybe that had a factor. I'm not sure. I know that makes sense, especially now in the South. We love to kind of, you know, we'd love to be like, oh, Lincoln didn't want me in this SEC business, you know. I don't know. I'm not sure I buy it, but. Maybe it was something, maybe, you know, I guess time will tell. And as we hear more from him, maybe we'll get more clarity on kind of what went into the decision. But, you know, I'm probably never know for sure exactly what was going on you know, behind the scenes and everything. I think Oklahoma's still a good job. I think, you know, as dominant as they've been, you know, it's I mean, goodness, it's funny. Like, we were just talking about LSU, Florida, and USC, and now, you know, we're talking about Oklahoma and Notre Dame. Like, it's just crazy. Like, all these teams that, you know, had these coaching cycles. And now I'm all the Tennessee fans are just, you know, they're like, just trying to lock down Josh Heupel as hard as they can, like, hoping he didn't go to Oklahoma. I mean, it's crazy. Like, no one is safe right now. That's one thing we've learned. No coach is safe. You better have – I mean, Jimbo Fisher was rumored. Like, he just signed a multi-year extension. I mean, what do extensions, what do buyouts, what does that even mean anymore? I mean, it definitely is it's a very crazy time. I have no idea who Oklahoma will hire, but I do think that I think it's still a very high-quality job. That whoever gets that job, if it's the right guy, they can still be a major force in the SEC.
Do you think Billy Napier gets, you know, Florida fans where they expect to be? Is that a deal where they're going to be spinning their wheels with him?
I love Billy Napier. I mean, oh. I'm biased on Billy Napier. So he was at Alabama when I was there. I've always really liked him. I think the players really like him. I think he's a good coach. I think he's really passionate. Like, I think he understands recruiting. I mean, I think, you know, that was the biggest complaint with Dan Mullen, I think, from a lot of people on the inside, is Dan Mullen and a lot of the other older, more experienced coaches he had with him, they didn't like recruiting. And, look, I don't blame them, just to be honest with you. I wouldn't like it either, especially now with NIL stuff and everything. Like, you want me to go around and tell a bunch of 18-year-olds who've never really done anything how great they are? I mean, that's hard. But I think Billy Napier will bring some youth, some younger guys in there that understand, you know, the lifeblood of the program and understand the area. I mean, he's a Georgia kid, went to Furman, you know, so he knows that area really well and has recruited Florida, I'm sure, a bunch. And I think it's a good fit, and I think he'll do a good job. You know, I think it'll take time. I mean, look, we're about to see in true practice how this is all going to work when these coaches leave. And I'm fascinated, honestly. A little scared, but also fascinated. Like, we could have mass exoduses from all these places, you know. Now we have the NIL deal. We have also, you know, the one-time transfer deal. Like, I mean, what's going to happen? Like, all these recruits going to leave, decommit? Are current players, freshmen, are they going to leave? Like, I have no idea, like, how many players these coaches are going to take with them, how many recruits. Like, it's going to be wild watching how many dominoes shift around. If you work for, you know, one of those recruiting services, 24/7 or whatever, Rival Scout, I imagine you're going to be extremely busy trying to figure out all the decommitments and recommitments and all the stuff going on, because it's going to be, I think, in my opinion, a complete madness with all the guys decommitting and recommitting to these different schools, and some guys waiting and seeing who the new coach is going to be. Some guys are leaving. I mean, like Caleb Williams, everyone's talking about, is he going to leave Oklahoma and go to USC? They're preparing some NIL deal. Supposedly, like, it's crazy to think about all the dominoes that are going to fall player-wise because of these coaching moves.
That's right.
We are, of course, talking to three-time national champion Barrett Jones here on the show. Are we getting another year of Lane? Another season of Lane Kiffin, the reality show there in Oxford? Seems like maybe we're running out of opportunities here for him.
Yeah, maybe. You know, the rumors are still, I think Miami's still kind of deciding what they want to do, and that's supposedly a job that might be attractive to. I don't think I know why. I wouldn't want to go be there. The facilities are terrible, and they haven't been good in a while. You know, I don't know. Lane's a guy that's hard to predict what he's going to do, as we know. He's a different cat. He's had an unbelievable year. I mean, the best regular season maybe, and not in history, but in a long time. First double-digit regular season, I think, in Ole Miss ever. I mean, he was awesome this year, and obviously Matt Corral, having a quarterback like him, really helped. You know, I do know that if Lane does make a move, if I were Ole Miss, I would probably hire Jeff Lebby immediately. I think he's really good, and I think he's been a bigger part than a lot of people realize. Their offensive coordinator of what's happened at Ole Miss. So, you know, we'll see. I get the idea that Lane has interest in going somewhere, which I when the cycle started, I kind of thought he might just say, "I'm really happy where I am." That's not what I've heard necessarily. Not that he's unhappy, but just that he's open to looking places. So, you know, I don't know. We'll just have to see. I still think there's, even though they've had success this year, there are people that are a little wary of Lane just because of all the things in the past. And, you know, I know that his reputation has changed a little bit, but, you know, there's a lot of factors when you hire Lane. And, you know, you're going to get good offense and good quarterback play probably, because he can really coach them up and call plays as well as anybody I've ever been around. But there's also just a lot of other factors you have to consider.
What's this Georgia-Alabama SEC championship game going to look like, Barrett? I got to imagine after watching, you know, Alabama struggle last week in the Iron Bowl, do get the victory, that most folks, and I guess us included, think this, you know, Georgia's going to romp stomp to a win here. What's it got to look like for Alabama to pull the upset?
You know, certainly, look, it's unlikely. I think Georgia's really good. Let me give you some Georgia, a different way to think about things.
Okay.
Before I say this, let me just say I'm not saying that Georgia's not good. I think they're good. I called the Georgia-Clemson game, which, by the way, is, as you look back, the best team that Georgia played.
Sure,
a Clemson team
sure
that had some serious problems early in the year. And they're the only ranked team that Georgia played is Clemson. So their offense, we've all seen it. It's a train wreck this year. It was really a mess. And so it was a 3-3 game with a pick six by Georgia that made it 10-3. It was ugly. It was an ugly game. The defense was awesome as they were all year. The offense didn't really do a whole lot against Clemson, who I think finished as the second best defense in the country. So that was the number one, the number two defense in the country. By the way, completely ridiculous. I saw the stats. I think I don't want to butcher the numbers, but it was, I believe, 80 points or 83 points or something allowed by Georgia the entire year. The next closest team was Clemson with like 180.
Good
so, I mean,
grief.
Absolutely ridiculous how much better Georgia's defense was than anyone else. But that being aside, I think that Georgia hasn't really seen a dynamic passing attack yet. They haven't. They haven't seen anything that even resembles John Metchie and Jameson Williams. Now, The problem all year for teams has been protecting and giving their quarterback time to throw the ball down the field. In fact, no one's really done it, I mean, at all. Like the C line, the front seven has just been too good and too overwhelming. And certainly there weren't a lot of things you saw in that Auburn-Alabama game that give you the idea that all of a sudden the protection is going to be incredible from Alabama. So I'm not saying it's a simple open and shut case. However, I do think that potentially, and if you look back to going into the season, that was one of the big concerns for Georgia, was a relatively inexperienced secondary compared to everyone else on their team. Potentially, you know, I think you can throw it on them a little bit. Again, you got to protect, but I do think that downfield, if there's a way to buy time, that there's some favorable matchups for Alabama and the athletes they have against that Georgia secondary. You know, number two is the offense. I think, obviously, that we've talked a lot about all the different offensive things that Georgia's done this year. I mean, Stetson Bennett now apparently is the guy. You know, Georgia lives really on running the football. I mean, that's where they've been. Their most successful is on the ground, and they've just kind of almost been a boa constrictor. Honestly, watching Georgia, it reminds me so much of some of my old Alabama teams where, you know, you just don't have to do much offensively because your defense is that good. And I do think that Alabama's defense has gotten a little bit better the last few weeks, and that stopping the run is where they're at their best. So I think it's a decent matchup there for Alabama. Look, all that being said, do I think that Alabama will win? No, but okay. Do I think they could win? Do I see a scenario? Yeah, I do see a scenario, and I would never count Nick Saban out. He'll have a great game plan for Georgia. And yeah, there's also the reality of getting over the mental hump for Georgia of finding a way to beat Alabama. There's
it's
been
true.
Several times where they should have beaten them and ended up not happening.
Barrett, you're the best, man. Thank you for the time, Barrett. As always.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yep,
pleasure.
He is Barrett Jones. Three-time national champ. Yeah, I want to go back real quick, Jason, real quick to the SEC piece. Barrett did not seem to give that much credence, the idea that Lincoln would
– He was reportedly saying they weren't prepared, remember that, for the move. Like, he wasn't all for the move in the first place.
Like, it's
But the whole fear factor that he speaks – I'm kind of with him on that.
But that falls into quality of life, though, right?
Yeah. Less pressure.
Being in the Pac-12, where
I think where I differ from him is I think USC is more of a sleeping giant that can get back quickly if you've got the right quarterback. And who knows quarterbacks?
Absolutely.
He can get them back there and maybe to a championship,
yes,
national championship level.
They're going to score
you can do
points.
That relatively quickly out there,
yes,
with them. That's the difference for me.
Absolutely.
It's just not going out there and, oh, it can be a ho-hum living. Expectations will be low. I think he can get them back.
No, I think
I truly do.
I mean, he's the best hire they've made since Pete Carroll.
Exactly. And college football is better when they're big time.
Yeah.
And I think he can get them back big time.
He's like the only good hire they've made since Pete Carroll. Like even
it's
like
been ugly since then.
Even like, I mean, Clay Helton,
they've fallen off.
Sarkisian, all those guys. You know, Lane. You know, Lane was a mess there.
I mean,
he had to grow up.
No, I thought you make some good points there. I thought Jeff might go, if you were Texas right now with your boy, and I'm bringing back up because you just mentioned his name, Sarkisian.
Mm-hmm.
How you feeling that you're not in this you know, on this carousel right now with all these whales moving, you're stuck with your guy. Probably going to be here, what, next year? Maybe?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. No, that's the way it's going to go.
That thing's an absolute joke right now. And they're watching everybody, all these big whales and all these big programs changing faces, and they're sitting there with old Sarkisian and the coach
who's
got the pole assassin.
Yeah. Well, that's entertaining at least, you know.
How many kids you think picking it right with all this stuff are excited about Texas right now?
Well, if you can promise me a meeting with pole assassin, it might help my decision. But keep the monkey away. Yeah. I don't want to have my face ripped off by the monkey.
I'll tell you this right now. Seth Hennigan, no part of it.
Yeah. No, I think that's definitely
true. It's a mess.
Yeah, that's one where, like,
count them out. That's what I was trying to tell y'all a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. All right, we will come back, wrap this thing up here on a Tuesday. Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
JobsWithTheBest.com. Hey. JobsWithTheBest.com.
That's all you got to do. Put it in your, search bar, your web address bar, and get yourself a job. Aaron Rodgers was on with Pat McAfee. I know you saw that picture of his foot, right?
I didn't see it.
I saw folks talking about it.
No, what's going on?
Well, still stuck on Deion's foot.
Aaron had a little quip.
It's about the toe, right?
Yeah, he said Rex Ryan loved that picture.
Foot fetish, Rex
Damn.
Ryan.
Damn.
That man just throw Rex all up under the bus. Didn't deserve all that.
Damn, old Rex can't even get beyond that whole deal.
Yeah, it's actually his Twitter picture. His foot is his Twitter profile picture.
Remember that whole deal with Rex Ryan? That was crazy.
Yeah, he said,
I think Rex Ryan probably enjoyed it.
You Damn. Know?
That's crazy. Rex Ryan just catching strays.
He needs to get back into coaching fast because they're making a clown of him over on Get Up. He's become the laugh at me hour. He does dances and stuff. I need Rex back in football.
He probably likes that.
Though. He kind of embraces that role.
Yeah, he's kind of a little out there like that.
But it's changing his legacy. I'll say that.
what is his legacy? Yeah, bro. Like, what legacy is he trying to preserve?
Failed AFC East coach. That's his legacy. But it was NFL football coach. It was
Jets coach that ever did anything.
I mean, from a very prestigious family, the Ryans.
Yeah.
Buddy Ryan.
Not all, buddy.
Architect of the 4-6. Fool, he's the son of it. I've always held Rex the son of that in high regard, even though he's a failed head coach at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like seeing him be a clown. It's kind of like same thing.
No.
Yeah, it is.
Bruh, stop.
I don't like seeing folks laugh at it. You're better than that.
How is Larry being laughed at?
Rex Ryan.
Did you not just say Larry?
No,
though?
Where I was going to go was Lawler.
Oh,
Lawler. Okay. In the skits where what it was, the fiend roughs him up.
That's literally
laughing at
show
you.
Business.
It's the same thing with Rex.
Like a
right
prop.
Now. Yes.
Yeah.
You're better than that, man.
You're better.
Yeah, but everybody has to be the, you know, there's got to be a foil, you know. I mean, that's just the way it works on these shows, man. I mean, it ain't like it's entertainment. It's everybody can't be, you know, all buttoned up all the time.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, what if I was like you? You know, all the time. I'm all serious and offended over everything.
Your buddy Jeff Goodman made a good point. He said J.J. Redick goes on ESPN and doesn't look the clown and is entertaining. You know, he basically made that point on Twitter.
Well, when you're a former player, right, and you can.
But Kendrick's kind of clowny sometimes.
Of course he is. Absolutely. Like, he does this whole carry the hell on thing, you know, which
is
not like.
It's a bit.
Yeah, like, well, Kendrick has, and this is a fundamental problem, Kendrick has problems talking. You know, so he has to be funny.
Yeah, but y'all don't understand. Like, Barkley was there when he first started, and folks used to make fun of the way Barkley talked.
Yeah, that's true.
And it became a part of the American fabric, quite frankly.
Yeah, Kendrick feels like a poor man's Charles Barkley.
He's kind of played into it. And it works. He's getting paid. That man.
It's working for Kendrick. Don't hate on that man.
No, I hate
him. Charles is way funnier naturally than Kendrick Perkins is, though. Like, it feels like Perkins is forcing it, which is fine. It seems
Charles developed. Give Kendrick some more time.
I'll give him a little bit more time, Jason.
Yep.
That's going to do it for us today. Thanks to Barrett Jones for joining us today. Thanks to Jessica Vince for joining us on the show today. Giannotto and Jeffrey are up next. They'll be talking all things college football, coaching carousel. Don't miss that. For Jason, I'm John. We're gone.
Jason and John.
Kendrick Perkins.
What do you think on the other side of that team they beat, the Utah Jazz the other night, and what felt like a Mike Conley, sort of Mike Conley night, right? He returns home.
You know, Mike Conley to the defensive player, Rudy Gobert.
Big Perk, I like the way you say Gobert. Like, you don't even play with that French pronunciation. You just go straight in on Gobert.
The Jason and John Show, weekdays 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis's sports station. All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country.
Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.